This is Remembering Yugoslavia, the show exploring the memory of a country that no longer exists. I'm your MC, Peter Korchnak. Two events top the calendar of Yugoslavia's memory. The first is the commemoration of Yugoslavia's founding, the former Dan Republike, Day of the Republic, in Jajce on the 29th of November. The 76th anniversary of Dan Republike anchored my very first trip for the project to the region in November 2019. That story is in episode 19, Happy Birthday Yugoslavia. Last year, I finally made it to the other defunct Yugoslav holiday commemoration event, and that's our episode today. But before we venture behind the mountains, as always, I first want to acknowledge new supporters of Remembering Yugoslavia. Gracias, Leonor, for your contribution. If you're anything like Leonor, you listen to the show not only to learn a thing or two about the former country, but also to be a part of something, a community of people who appreciate and honor Yugoslavia's memory. So join Leonor and many other fellow travelers and contribute to Remembering Yugoslavia's future. With your contribution, you'll not only get to support your favorite podcast, and me in making it, but also get access to the extended version of this episode, as well as all other past extended and bonus episodes. Visit rememberingyugoslavia.com/donate or follow the link in your podcast listening app and contribute today.
Padaj silo i nepravdo, narod ti sudi zal, bješte od nas noćne tmine, sanuje i naš dan. Bješte od nas noćne tmine, sanuje i naš dan.
With the pandemic effectively over and me in the region again last year, I centered my travels around that other major Yugoslav holiday. The annual celebration of the Day of Youth takes place on the Saturday nearest to the actual date, May 25th, in Kumrovec, a village in the region of Croatian Zagorje where Josip Broz Tito was born. In socialist Yugoslavia, the 25th of May was Tito's unofficial birthday. His actual birthday was the 7th, but on the 25th of May 1944, he had escaped the attack by Nazi Germany at Drvar, whereupon he felt as though he had been reborn, and so his birthday was celebrated on that day. The modest guy that he was, for his 65th birthday in 1957, Tito changed it to the holiday honoring young people, the country's future. Two major events marked the occasion back then. Štafeta mladosti, the youth relay, featured batons which tens and in some years hundreds of thousands of young runners carried around the country in a network of mass relay races. On the actual Day of Youth, one baton was delivered to the man himself at a slit, a mass game ceremony held at the Yugoslav People's Army Stadium in Belgrade. Tito's relay always made a stop at his birthplace. In Youth Day's first year, in 1957, the relay, now renamed the Youth Relay, even started in Kumrovec. The baton's first carrier was another Broz, 24-year-old Vilim Broz, flanked by Josipa Broz and Josipa Štefan. As all batons, this one bore within it a message to Tito from the people. His Kumrovec compatriots informed him the village was progressing, including with the construction of a school and a railway. More than 15,000 people attended the event in spite of rain. The Day of Youth was celebrated until 1987, when it was the first all-Yugoslav holiday to be discarded as the country began to disintegrate. After a 14-year hiatus, the Day of Youth has been commemorated in Kumrovec again since 2003 with the break for the pandemic. The main organizers of the commemoration are the Association of Josip Broz Tito Societies and the Association of Anti-Fascist Fighters and Anti-Fascists of Croatia.
We are against the return to the dark time of our history. And we are trying to be a part of a civilized and modern world. We are considered in our country as being a criminal organization.
Jovan Vejnović is the chair of the Association of Josip Broz Tito Societies, an umbrella organization of 30-plus local organizations with some 5,000 members all over Croatia, dedicated to the memory and achievements of Yugoslavia's lifelong president. In the Yugoslav times, Vejnović worked at embassies across North Africa, and he was also Croatia's ambassador to Libya from 2005 to 2009. I spoke with him at his office in central Zagreb with street and neighboring Barnoš to go with it. Political anthropologist Larisa Kurtović has written that these groups invest in celebrations, anniversaries, and feasts precisely because they understand that politics is not only about ideology, but also about ordinary human experiences and forms of belonging that can be formed out of it. The event is nowadays billed as the Day of Youth and Joy.
It is linked to the birthday of Tito. But we are not celebrating the person of Tito, the personality of Tito. We are trying to put forward some ideas which was born during Second World War and during Yugoslavia. We are interested more in values than personality of Tito. We are trying now to put forward the ideas developed during this time, you know. So the values are more important for us because of the fact that the values are attacked now. I'm talking about the right of minorities, right of youth, right of disabled person, whatever. And unfortunately, we are in a position that we have to struggle against the neo-fascist ideas which are more and more present in not only, so only in Croatia, but also all over the Europe. We are trying also to put it to be some kind of regional gathering in this part of Europe.
The 2022 Day of Youth and Joy got rescheduled just a few days prior to the original date. In the ensuing logistical scramble, I got stuck with a 6-person rustic room at Villa Zelenjak Ventek, just a few kilometers before the village proper. There was a bearskin on the floor between a couple of antique love seats, and I had a pick of queen beds in the loft beneath exposed beams. The jovial receptionist slash waiter sympathized with me, but all other rooms were booked with travelers attending the next day's event. When he later brought me an early dinner, he said, "Are you going to get a Tito t-shirt tomorrow?" "I'm not," I said. "I'm just going to take photos of people wearing them." "Why not?" "I'm not a communist," I laughed. "Well, I'm not a communist either, and I have one at home," he said, and laughed too. "I wear it to bed for good dreams." I razzed him a bit and dared him to wear his Tito tee to work tomorrow. "I can't. Some people would get upset," he said, rolling his eyes. Plus, he had to wear his uniform, black slacks and white shirt, he sighed. People just don't appreciate history or cultural heritage.
Pravo naše ugrabljeno, a monatra dajte nam, ne date li, ne molimo, uzet će ga morca, ne date li, ne molimo, uzet će ga morca.
Were it not for Josip Broz having been born there, Kumrovec would be one of the many tiny villages in Zagorje, the region literally behind the mountains, as its Croatian name connotes, in the northern part of today's Croatia, bordering Slovenia. With its picturesque rolling hills, some topped with castles, thermal springs, vineyards, spas, museums, as well as a tradition of comfort food, it's been described as an undiscovered region with a fairy tale landscape designed for rural retreats and casual road trips. Not every tourism website or blog introducing Hrvatsko Zagorje will mention the self-proclaimed best-known village in the world, located just 60 kilometers northwest from Zagreb. Josip Broz was born here in Kumrovec in 1892, most likely on May 7th, the 7th of 15 children of Franjo Broz and Marijane Javeršek, a Slovene. The future president attended a 4-year elementary school here and left the village at the age of 15 to pursue an illustrious career in locksmithing and revolution.
During Yugoslavia, it was also the political place. It was one of the main landmarks of socialist ideology and the cradle of the socialist ideology, so to say, which was at the same time the cradle of the person who was called the greatest son of Yugoslav nations and nationalities, and that is Josip Broz Tito.
Nevena Škrbić-Alempijević is a professor at the Department of Ethnology and Cultural Anthropology at the Faculty of Humanities and Social Sciences of the University of Zagreb. She has extensively studied Kumrovec as a place of memory.
The village, which at the beginning of the 20th century had around 250 inhabitants, and at the half of the century around 300, was really transformed into a sign of socialist progress. And the official narrative stated that the place was only one example of the huge transformation that affected Yugoslavia after the Second World War.
Elsewhere, Škrbić-Alempijević has written that the main goal was to restructure the place and its surroundings in accordance with the socialist politics of remembering, which revolved around the heroism of the National Liberation War, the brotherhood and unity of the Yugoslav peoples, and the cult of Tito. Tito stood, or perhaps placed himself, at the center of Yugoslavia's political mythology, and he was a personification of the country itself. Tito was Yugoslavia, Tito's body was Yugoslavia's, and so where he was born was even more essential to its myth than Jajce was. It took some work to transform a backwater village into a paragon of progress.
This whole transformation was, of course, conducted through the building of infrastructure. So it started with the erection of the monument done by a great Croatian slash Yugoslav sculptor Anton Augustinčić.
Augustinčić was the second greatest sculptor to come out of what's now Croatia. He was embedded with the partisans in Jajce when he made first a bust, then the full-size statue of the resistance leader. Tito is depicted in a uniform beneath a long military trench coat blown open in a gust of wind, mid-stride with his arms behind his back and his head hung low in contemplation. This is Tito as both a military and thought leader, both a marshal and a statesman. The Croatian-Yugoslav writer Miroslav Krleža described the statue as an almost melancholic silhouette not modeled in a victorious fashion, but rather as a man with his head bowed down as the result of continual worries deep in thoughts. Tito liked the piece and after the war ordered it cast in bronze. The first copy, made in Zagreb in 1948, was placed next to Tito's birth home in Kumrovec. Some 20 copies were made in the ensuing years and a handful remain. In Dallas, Texas, in a private collection, in Kranj, Podgorica, Skopje, Augustinčić's gallery in Klanjec, the sculptor's home village near Kumrovec, plus two apiece in Belgrade and Sarajevo. The statue was also reproduced in various sizes and placed in factories, schools, barracks, museums, and other less public spots. The biggest exception is a 6-meter-tall version from 1977, Tito's 85th birthday, that still overlooks the central square in Velenje, formerly Titovo or Tito's Velenje. The original statue's location on a small plaza next to Tito's birth house made it so that, quote, all paths through Kumrovec led to Tito's monument.
And very soon after that, the birth house was transformed into a museum.
The Memorial Museum of Marshal Tito was opened in 1953. The idea was to transform, quote, the cradle in which the greatest son of Yugoslav nations and nationalities was rocked into a showcase of socialist progress and focal point of nation-building strategies.
An ethnologist was in charge of this transformation, Marijana Gušić, who decided to build this house around two main axes. One axis was to show the idealized imagery of a setting in which Josip Broz Tito was born. And of course, in that part, the cradle of this greatest son was the central topos.
Gušić went about locating the actual cradle in which Tito had been rocked. Traditionally in Zagorje, when an object, like a cradle, was no longer used, it was given to neighbors who did need it. So it's possible the Broz family cradle was given away after the last child was done with it. Nevertheless, Gušić claimed, with relative certainty, that she had found the cradle.
Of course, this relativity is not shown in the exhibition in any way. So when you visit the museum, and you can still do it, this is the cradle. There is no doubt this is the cradle in which Josip Broz Tito was rocked.
The cradle is in the right side of the house as you enter it, and the part of the exhibit featuring the Broz family residence as it may have been at the end of the 19th century. An article in Narodni List in 1955 described the scene thusly. By the stove there is a pleasant corner, the mother's place. There is a spinning wheel, a chair, and a cradle. The little child was to be near his mother. The cradle is real, from the president's childhood.
And in the second part of the house, she decided to show Josip Broz Tito's success story. So the way he led the anti-fascist fight and his building of a new Yugoslav nation.
While the right wing of the house was mythological, the left side was ideological. The exhibits walked the visitor through Tito's life, his education, his revolutionary activities, and the leadership of the anti-fascist struggle and later of Yugoslavia. As Gušić herself put it, the museum invited visitors to witness, quote, the way barefoot boys of Zagorje found their path into the world, leaving their poor homes behind, fled from their destitute village, carrying rebellion in their chests, as well as determination to attain a happier future for new generations with their blisters. Furthermore, the museum showed, quote, the way in which one of those fledglings has succeeded in getting to the forefront of the world battle for peace and for the future of humanity. Gušić became the museum's director in 1954 on the directive of Tito himself, who liked what she had done with the place. Tito's house was the first and most important element of a bigger ethnographic open-air museum in central Kumrovec. From the 1950s to the 1970s, Gušić and her team restored or reconstructed some 40 residential, commercial, and ancillary buildings to depict village life in the region in the late 19th, early 20th century. This Skansen was former Yugoslavia's first and now Croatia's only open-air museum. It remains on the country's cultural heritage list.
Other infrastructural projects were also very, very important, like a huge political school, a congress hall called Spomendom, then a huge elementary school building,
which was three times the size of the local student body and a focal point of the annual Day of Youth celebration. Other additions included a steel rolling mill, apartments, new traffic infrastructure, as well as a number of monuments dedicated to partisans and other Yugoslav greats.
So we had all this infrastructure that was supposed to support the idea that Kumrovec becomes one of the central points in the socialist ideology.
At the same time, some things were built, others were removed. Inside the house, the holy corner, a sort of a house altar with a cross, was removed. A barn the Broz family owned that stood on the property outside the house was deemed too big for a supposedly poor peasant family. And the Roman Catholic Church of St. Rocco on top of a hill above Kumrovec happened to tower over Tito's residence, so it was torn down in 1964. The village that was turned into a place of memory and ideology also essentially became a tourist destination.
All of us who grew up during the socialist times had to visit Kumrovec, to watch partisan movies in the buildings there, to visit his birdhouse, etc. So it was also used as a place to convey the memory, to bring up the youth which was adapted to the system that was in power at that moment. People visited individually, of course, but very many groups came in an organized way, through schools, through various syndicates, organizations, etc.
Kumrovec was, according to a period guidebook, a favorite excursion destination for Yugoslavs and many guests from abroad. People went there mostly on day trips, by car, public transit, including regular bus and train lines, trips organized from their schools or workplaces, and in the case of young people, hikes as well. The 10-year-old protagonist of the 1991 film Tito I ja, Tito and I, goes to meet the man in Kumrovec on one such school hike. Škrbić Alempijević and Petra Kilimen have written that visitors not only learned about Tito, they communed and communicated with him in a way, as notes in the visitor logbook testify. Visits to the village were educational, nostalgic, and an escape from the everyday. Visitors brought the museum made by the political and cultural authorities to life, and they made it into their own. Children and youth who came on compulsory school excursions played a particularly important role, indoctrinated as they were on these visits, and symbolically as they extended Tito's life and message into the future. The article, In May the Valley is Green in the Most Beautiful Way, published in Slobodna Dalmacija in 1965, highlighted Tito's birthday as the best time to visit Kumrovec. Visitors would then be relieved of their worries, burdened only by beauty, in this idyllic corner of Hrvatsko Zagorje, since here is where the spark of our one universal idea was generated. Tito came too, quite often in fact. His visits served to authorize and reaffirm the place as authentic and important for all Yugoslavs. His visits were widely reported in the media, showing him strolling along the paths or in the surrounding nature, meeting local residents as their equal, greeting them or sitting with them, even bringing the cattle back from pasture. In 1974, he gifted the local Hunters Association, celebrating its 30th anniversary, a number of his trophies, including a leopard. The locals had mixed feelings about it all.
It is such a shock, a cultural shock in a way, to have this relatively calm, quiet village set at the backwoods of Zagorje, which explodes at a certain time. But unlike nowadays, when you still have these celebrations of the Day of Youth, constant visits to Kumrovec made the celebrations of Tito's achievements something that had an impact of their everyday life constantly, not only during the Day of Youth. So they were, in a way, used to all these, you know, rivers of people coming to their place. There is no uniform, monolith attitude to it. But in some kind of more general sense, what people, local people told us, that in a way they were definitely proud of this legacy. Tito was their son, in a way, and they very often showed closeness to it. And This was actually one of the mechanisms of the state apparatus as well, because the villagers, people from Kumrovec, were used as synonyms for the whole nation. So closeness of Tito with people from Kumrovec was used as an epitome of his closeness with the whole nation. But of course, as in any tourist destination, people also are quite irritated with all these people coming and bothering them in their everyday life. And of course, there were some political pressures as well. For instance, villagers protested during the organization of this open-air museum, because very many houses, traditional rural houses in the center of the village, were bought from the villagers. And in that way, we, in a way, witnessed some kind of gentrification of this village, because this whole center was emptied of people. They were moved from the core of their village. They were either offered apartments at the outskirts of the village, or they moved elsewhere. But that left the center of the village only to visitors, in a way. There were no people actually living their lives there anymore.
Over time, Kumrovec residents not only got used to living in the new reality, they learned to benefit from it. They sold homemade food and beverage items and handicrafts to visitors and rented out rooms for overnight stays. It could have been brisk business. In the 1970s, some 500,000 to 600,000 people visited Kumrovec every year. In the 3 years after Tito's death, the numbers rose threefold to about 1.5 million. From 1985 to 1987, still about a million visitors came to Kumrovec each year. The Day of Youth was indeed by far the most popular time to visit Kumrovec.
It was one of the vital stops where this baton relay would stop and very often stay overnight on its way throughout the country to Belgrade.
Thousands of people gathered for the annual celebration. There were speeches, there was music and dance and award ceremonies, and a long-distance race called the Partisan March took place. The gathering in 1965, for example, also included a youth choir performance in front of Tito's house, a reading of a letter to Tito, the launch of various publications, a broadcast of a special radio program, an exhibition of paintings, and lighting of bonfires on top of hills. The Day of Youth in 1980 took place just 3 weeks after Tito died. The Daily Vjesnik, the newspaper of record in Croatia, had extensive preparatory and reporting coverage of the event. On the day of, a big article was headlined, "The Future of Youth is Tito's Yugoslavia." Reporting on the events, Vjesnik first proclaimed above the fold, "We are all Tito." In Kumrovec, the holiday was, to quote the then head of the Partisan Veterans Association, celebrated with the feeling of great pain and sadness for the beloved comrade Tito. But there was also a feeling of, quote, happiness and joy that we had Tito, that we were his partisans, that we are building Tito's free and independent socialist Yugoslavia, that we are his youth and young pioneers, and that we will continue to be all that. A young pioneer then read an open letter to the Communist Party leadership. Athletes competed in the 28th annual Partisan March race, now a marathon, and the good people of Zagorje and Zagreb planted 88 red maples along the Josip Broz Tito street, which runs through the village center to create a tree-lined alley. Each tree was to represent 1 year of Tito's life and, quote, the revolutionary work for the good of our country and all of humanity. Comrade Tito loved nature, and so this is the best way to commemorate his love. It will be a kind of a green sculpture.
No, Nova doba, Matija Ivaniću, ustatićeš ti iz groba, s tobom u boj počiću, ustatićeš ti iz groba, s tobom u boj počiću.
Kumrovec, from the very start of the socialist system, was transformed into a political place, and one of the places where the ideology was supposed to be spread. And of course, with the fall of this system, it at the same time became the realm of collective amnesia.
As the newly independent Croatia waged the War of Independence, also known as the Homeland War, against the Yugoslav People's Army in the early 1990s, a new nationalist narrative took hold. As the historian Hrvoje Klasić put it way back in episode 10, Croatia's History Illness.
From 1945 to 1990, there was a black and white narrative with good guys and bad guys, with demonization and glorifications. Dealing with the past was very tendentious, very selective, very ideological. On one side, good guys were communists and all who were supporting them, and bad guys were all who were not supporting them. In the 90s, with democratization, actually nothing crucially changed. This black and white narrative became white and black. So those who were bad guys, they became good guys. Those who were demonized, they are now glorified. And it's, again, selective tendentions and very ideological, not communist, but nationalist ideology.
Kumrovec was a prime target. It's not so much the place was depoliticized, but rather it was repoliticized.
The socialist legacy was no longer on a list of wanted, desirable identification strategies. And in a way, they were suppressed. And Tito, who was the personification of the whole country, was definitely on the list of this unwanted inventory of socialism. And the same went for his birthplace.
Tito the hero was now Tito the criminal and traitor of the Croatian nation. The cross and the holy corner were returned to Tito's birth home, and quote-unquote provocative exhibits were removed from the left wing of the house and put in storage in Villa Kumrovec, or simply discarded. Upon my visit in November 2019, the exhibit on young pioneers almost completely omitted mentions of him or of Yugoslavia. The old village museum was refocused on the 19th century rural life and Zagorje traditions. Other than cultivating the open-air exhibits, the museum, which is financed by the Ministry of Culture, holds various demonstrations like a Zagorje wedding or a Three Kings visitation, and organizes workshops for children and others to show customs and techniques of rural life like Easter egg decorating or flour milling. According to ethnographers, many visitors, both domestic and foreign, come for Tito's house and are quite pleasantly surprised to find the open-air museum as well. Visits to the village declined too. In 1990, some 200,000 people, and in 1991, less than 10,000 people visited the museum in Kumrovec. Nowadays, according to the museum director Anita Paun-Gadja, about 70,000 people visit annually. The largest number of visitors is from Croatia, followed by Slovenia. Some estimates claim up to one half of visitors is from Slovenia. Visitors are delighted with the exhibits they can see in the museum because it brings them back to their childhood, said Paun-Gadja.
When people from Kumrovec described to us how this process affected their everyday life, they often mention one situation when they spotted that their village was no longer on the geographical maps of Croatia. So it, in a way, disappeared. It was removed from the map.
To the victors go the maps, I suppose. Maps printed in Croatia in the 1990s did not include Kumrovec. Even the road signs around the village were removed. Cartographic erasure went hand in hand with physical one. The village was purged of socialist symbols. Monuments were removed. The political school and the Spomen dom were shuttered. With the Tito-shirted waiter's words still resonating, I drove to the village to explore the abandoned buildings. On the way to Villa Kumrovec, I passed the Red Maple Alley. The street is now Tito-less, called just Josip Broz Street, and there are only 87 trees now. Tito actually died 3 days short of his 88th birthday. One of the red maples grew stunted, and later a car crashed into it, so it had to be replaced. The replant dried out. Villa Kumrovec was Tito's residence here. The 1948 building was originally a hotel built on a hill in a local vernacular style. It was renovated and converted in 1962 and furnished with mid-century modern interior. In 2015, the municipality opened the place for tours. It was shuttered when I visited late in the day, but through a dirty basement window I could see a room filled with statues and busts of Tito and other now useless items. By contrast, the political school at the other end of the village was wide open. Built in 1981 following the designs of Danilo Cvetković and Miomir Lužajić, the Yugoslav League of Communists Josip Broz Tito Political School served as a boarding facility where, quote, young and through political experience vetted party political cadres from all republics and provinces learn about Marxist political philosophy and self-management socialist theory. Graduates include a previous president of independent Slovenia, a former prime minister of Croatia, and one Slavoj Žižek. The building's long sloping profile with dark paneling follows the contours of the hill behind it. It stands abandoned on the village outskirts, sometimes open to interlopers.
When we are thinking about the politics of remembering, as there was an intentional effort to build this whole infrastructure, there was a very systemic forgetting of the infrastructure. So the buildings, the huge buildings I mentioned, the political school and Spomendon, they were left empty and they still don't have a certain purpose. They are just there, although they are huge potential in a way.
I roamed through the building, admiring the modernist lines and sharp angles and the devastation, peeking into some of the 150 rooms sprawled across its four floors.
What happened in the 90s also is that refugees from certain part of Slavonia primarily were situated in these buildings. And very many of these people felt this as another insult, to be in a way chased away from their homes by the Yugoslavs people army and then located in the village where Tito was born. So they were really, really furious about this situation.
Many of the rooms of Hotel Zagorje, as it got to be called, still contain the vestiges from the 1990s. Sports stickers on furniture, music posters, newspapers, a holy picture here and there, a graffito wishing Happy New Year 1997-98, even an old roll of pink toilet paper. In the common areas, the bar was particularly photogenic, covered in green algae and moss, the roof dripping, broken soda bottles and debris crunching underfoot. Find photos from the political school as well as the rest of the village and the Day of Youth celebration in the episode transcript at rememberingyugoslavia.com or on my Instagram at rememberingyugoslavia.
I would like to stress one important thing. They are doing it deliberately. They are waiting that the school will completely disappear.
Tito Society's Jovan Vejnović again.
The mayor of Kumrovec and the chief of county of Zagorje, they tried several times talk with the government in order to try to give us the space and we will try to organize something, we'll attract some investors or whatever. They never accepted this idea.
The Republic of Croatia still owns the building. There were attempts before the pandemic to sell it to a Chinese investor who was going to turn it into a hotel, but a deal never materialized. I completed my tour of Kumrovec socialist infrastructure with a repeat visit to the former Spomendom, also known as the Memorial House of People's Liberation Warfighters and Yugoslav Youth. At its opening on the Day of the Republic 1974, with his typical eloquence, Tito proclaimed, "Brotherhood and unity will radiate from here since fighters and young people from all parts of our country will come here." The award-winning pyramid-shaped brick and concrete complex atop a hill up from the main road comprised classrooms, a 62-room hotel with a pool and restaurant, library, an auditorium with a theater stage and film projection screen, combining for a site of education, conferences, youth activities, sports, and recreation. In February 1984, the Olympic torch made a stop here on its way from Slovenia to Zagreb. I peeked in through the windows of each of the three buildings. Nothing had changed since my previous visit in November 2019. Except this time, a guard asked me to leave the premises and herded me all the way to the stairway of youth leading down into the village. Behind me, the Spomendom continued to stand like a time capsule from the decade of my birth.
Nothing really happens because it is, in a symbolic sense, such a hot potato that nobody really knows what to do with it. The infrastructure of socialism in Kumrovec is pretty much left to ruin.
The locals' attitude to the new reality evolved as well.
Some of the local inhabitants told us that they were not ashamed of this heritage. They are still in a way proud to be a birthplace of an important historical figure. But they were sometimes irritated by these constant questions and comments, you're from Kumrovec, because Kumrovec is still a synonym for Tito in a way. And sometimes when they visited the seaside, when they had to register to, go somewhere, they would state that they are from some other place, not from Kumrovec, just to avoid this huge discussion on Kumrovec and socialism and Tito. What they resent is this idea of Kumrovec as a place stuck in the past, which in a way refuses them an opportunity to grow, to change, you know, to think about their contemporary everyday life.
Škrbić Alimpievich and a team of ethnographers visited Kumrovec in the renewed Day of Youth celebration second year in 2004.
When one of the researchers asked a local family whether they planned to take part in the celebration, they said, God, no, of course not. But later on, we saw them at the celebration. So obviously, this is still some kind of, you know, uneasy topic for them. We cannot talk about this celebration or the whole socialist legacy in black or white terms. I talked to a lady who was employed as a teacher in the school, and she led very many delegations through that school. And she said that although in the 90s, for example, it was a clear cut in the political systems and the approach to history, she never stopped guiding, taking their her students to the birthouse of Tito, not because of her political beliefs, but because she recognized that as some kind of local heritage in a way, you know, that children should know that the former president of a big country was born in their village. She's very aware of this political context. She doesn't live in an apolitical bubble, but in a way she was opposing this etiquette of Kumrovec being stuck in the past. She said, future is something I would like to talk about.
On the day of the event, the sun climbed the sky and the temperature rose exponentially. The first post-pandemic Day of Youth ended up being a sweltering one, part of a heat wave that gripped the continent at the time. Next to an actual parking lot filling with buses, a fallow field cum parking lot was filling up with cars. Other than Croatia, most plates were from Slovenia and Bosnia and Herzegovina, plus I saw a few from Serbia. In the small park between the main road and the museum, vendor stands lined the paths. Vintage Yugoslav-era magazines, pictures, most of them of Tito, of course, books, assorted knickknacks, memorabilia, t-shirts emblazoned with Tito or his quotes, souvenirs with Yugoslav motifs. The Josip Broz Tito Society, the event's main organizer, also had a dedicated table, selling their own merch. One of the vendors was a former doctor who told me he had worked in military hospitals and was now retired and selling off a bunch of his old stuff. I bought a copy of the Start magazine covering Tito's death. Another vendor of this old stuff was a very chatty and cheerful woman in heavy makeup. Passersby congratulated her on the assortment in front of her. I lingered, asked about this item or that, and finally she asked me, you know what the difference is between now and then? Back then we had a country. So what do we have now? I said. Nothing, she said. We have nothing. I bought the same post-Tito issue of Start. She said, I remember this day. Everybody cried. I cried too. As she handed me my change, she said, just remember one thing, young man. Enjoy every day of your life as much as you can because you only have one life. Commercialization of symbols of socialist Yugoslavia presents the single most visible aspect of the Yugo-nostalgia phenomenon, wrote Larisa Kurtović, the political anthropologist, in her 2011 article on the subject. These profit-making activities certainly contribute to the fair-like atmosphere that often marks such Yugo-nostalgic events. There were also stands with local products, honey, handicrafts, and the like, as well as kiosks selling food, from sausages to fried food to the Balkan standbys like pleskavica. And, of course, beer. And deep in the park, past the thicket of picnic tables and stand-up cocktail tables, where people ate and drank and were merry, a big gazebo tent was put up over a seemingly parallel event. Next to a bar, on a stage with some front space for dancing, a local band played folk music. Indeed, it all felt like a big annual village fair, though the folk event, likely organized by the village, was a newish addition to the day's festivities. Carnival-like events celebrating the memory of Yugoslavia managed to call into being forms of solidarity and relatedness that surpassed the political boundaries created by the violence of the 1990s, wrote Kurtović. While most people who go to these meetings do in fact hold dear Yugoslav socialist values, their motivations for making these at times long and uncomfortable trips are not exclusively political. These meetings are social occasions, and their communal aspect is not to be underestimated. Old-timers go as much out of sentimental affect as from the desire to travel, socialize, and have a good time. They are
trying to keep alive this kind of an alternative vision of togetherness. People come together from various parts of what used to be the same country to celebrate these holidays, to hang out, to recognize one another as kindred souls, in a sense.
You may recall Larisa Kurtović, political anthropologist at the University of Ottawa, from episode 19, Happy Birthday, Yugoslavia.
Especially for people who are of a slightly older generation, who grew up habituated to these forms of togetherness, to what are known as izleti, so the field trips, to these celebrations, even to things like, you know, Yugoslav work actions, where the youth of Yugoslavia would not just go to build railways and roads, but also to build this famous thing called Brotherhood and Unity. So to get to know people from other parts of Yugoslavia, to perhaps fall in love, to have a fling, you know, to make lifelong friends. I think that it's really important to recognize that part of what's being recreated or what people are after during these celebrations is also recreating these possibilities, even though they're much older right now and those possibilities may take different forms. And so when you see these kinds of organized efforts to come together, they're also trying to revive these traditions of collective trips and field trips. I think that dimension is quite important and that it has this kind of a subtle political character insofar that it points to a different way of being in the world.
The event means different things to different people.
For organizers, I think it is an act of building some kind of alternative counter memory that opposes the processes of forgetting socialist times, and especially anti-fascist fight. For them, that is really important to show also to younger generations, this is what happened. And this is also our legacy. We cannot just, you know, erase a whole episode. For some people, it is a commercial opportunity. You can get there, you trade in souvenirs, etc. For some, it is having fun, meeting old friends, singing old songs you cannot perform in public any longer. So it has the social component very emphasized as well. And I think for some, it is also about reshaping the imagery of the past. So it is some sort of an arena where you can still remember things that are not shown in the public sphere so often any longer.
Most people donned their civilian clothes, but there were quite a few that came dressed for the occasion, or rather in costume. There were military uniforms, or parts of them, a few young pioneer outfits, or parts of them, particularly the blue cap or the kerchief. Many people wore some related item or accessory, like a scarf or red t-shirt, perhaps with a political message or Tito's likeness, buttons or pins. A number of people waved or wore Yugoslav flags, and there was also a handful of red flags of particular organizations or groups.
When we talk about people who celebrate or commemorate certain dates related to socialism, to Yugoslavia, the political discourse very often disqualifies them as some kind of Yugo-nostalgic, people still living in their past, or very dangerous factors who would like to make some kind of political change. But what we found out in the field is that people are more often talking about the change in the quality of their life nowadays. So they use this imagery of the past to contrast it to some points, to some problems, issues they face in their everyday, with prospects of unemployment, with poor education, sometimes inefficient medical system, and they create some kind of utopia that in socialist times some things worked better. You know, people had a job, people had a steady career, they would be given state flats, etc., etc. So visitors, participants of such celebrations used this topos of socialism actually to comment on and criticize some trends they see as bad in the contemporary context. And very often people who visit these celebrations, who participate in them, are elderly. So it is about their youths as well. But what we can see also is a trend that certain groups of youngsters also decide to visit Kumrovec for other reasons. You know, for them it is some kind of critical stance. It's, you know, punker culture among Slovenian youth that was described by Mitja Velikonja, for example, where you carry a t-shirt with Tito's figure on it because he was cool. You know, he was somebody whom the whole world remembers. And that is one of the narratives. Please say another Croat, apart from Luka Modric, for example, whom the whole world knows, you know, that is Tito, not the politicians of this moment, of the present.
Among the younger attendees were young cohorts of various anti-fascist groups and political parties. One of the speakers was a young woman representing Bosnia and Herzegovina. But I also saw a woman, perhaps in her 30s, dressed for a party, who stood in front of Tito's statue, pulled out of her handbag a young pioneer cap, put it on, took a selfie, and quickly folded the cap back out of sight. It was the most decked out, or perhaps outrageously dressed, people that attracted the most media attention. Every one of the 5 or 6 TV crews wanted to speak with the diminutive elderly man in a now oversized uniform who was perhaps no longer quite with it, or to the Egyptian man named Ali, dressed in his traditional garb, who had come to Yugoslavia for university studies in Zagreb and now lives in Slovenia, and definitely to people quite literally wrapping themselves in Yugoslavia's flag. It felt a little bit like a human zoo, with reporters cherry-picking the most, let's say, unusual, let's say, specimens, so we could all laugh at them.
They are presenting, unfortunately, all events as a gathering of old people, which are still living in the old time, 50 years ago.
Yugo-nostalgics.
Yugo-nostalgics. They are trying to catch some small things, to present them to the public, that we are gathered there to celebrate Tito's person. I am always saying one thing. We are not trying to make the saint of Tito, but we will not accept the idea of criminalizing Tito.
But you never hear, at least in the reports I read, you never hear this, you know, moment of people there commenting of what they see as not so favorable trend in their everyday life. And the questions asked are, why are you celebrating? How do you remember the past? It's very rarely about the present and about the future, you know. It's not, what do you try to do? What messages do you want to convey through these kinds of celebrations or events? Perhaps it's not so rare a way of describing other events as well, you know, because people in uniforms or in costumes always draw attention. I could really see when I was studying other topics as well. But the critic of the everyday situation is not something that is conveyed in the public sphere.
Crowds thickened as I reached the cobblestone path of Josip Broz Street leading through the village center and to the site of official Day of Youth festivities. Media reports said thousands of people attended, while the Tito Society claimed 10,000 people attended a 2022 edition of the Day of Youth and Joy event. In 2004, around 5,000 people attended the event. The following year, the 25th anniversary of Tito's death, between 8 and 10,000. In 2015, 15,000 people showed up. Of course, the 40th was cancelled due to the pandemic. The patio outside the Kod Starog restaurant was packed. The name translates at the old man's. Stari, the old man, was one of Josip Broz's other nicknames. Inside, photographs show the old man on his visits to the village. One of the dessert menu items is Tito's štrukli. Across the way, the first stop and perhaps the main reason why people come here today, the statue of Tito. Despite all the changes in the museum and the village, the Augustinčić masterpiece remained in its place. In 2001, a bag with explosives was found at its feet. In 2004, after Christmas, someone blew the statue up. Tito's head rolled, quite literally.
The reaction of state officials, who at that time aspired to become a part of the European Union, was really swift. They were protesting in the media against this vandalism, and the Minister of Culture protested against this act. He held a rather long speech during the main news within the day, and protested against this aggression towards cultural heritage and the monument built by Anton Augustinčić, without once mentioning that this monument was actually depicting Tito. So this also shows some kind of change in the approach towards the musealization of socialist heritage. They decided to focus on cultural heritage and legacy without placing these socialist connotations to the forefront. Of course, the perpetrators were never found.
The statue was restored in time for the 2005 Day of Youth celebration. The statue is the obligatory stop during the event. People lined up to have their photos taken with it, positioning themselves at his sides. Large bouquets and wreaths cascaded from Tito's feet. My fellow Central European University alumna Maja Brklačić has observed that the statue enables people to identify with Tito and through him with Yugoslavia, and to transport themselves back in time. His name is our past, our present, and our future. His name is who we are, wrote Brklačić. But there's even more to it than time travel. Catherine Verdery has asserted that if a statue is a dead person cast in some inorganic material, it not only symbolizes that person, it is that person. It brings that person, quote, into the realm of the timeless or the secret, like an icon. Accordingly, in her research of Tito's statue in Kumrovec, Marijana Belaj at the University of Zagreb has observed that people encounter it in a very personal way. Many touch it, some salute it, some talk to it, some kiss it, many laugh, and a few even cry. It seems like kind of a religious experience in a way, like something you may see at the end of a pilgrimage or in a church when people worship saints. But, Belaj concluded, the element of nostalgia in these encounters is not for the country per se, but rather for their life in it, for their youth. After the statue, the next stop is Tito's birth home. There were too many people, and with a touch of post-pandemic paranoia, I decided to forego standing in line and squeezing into the tiny house with the masses. The exhibition about young pioneers I had seen with a handful of Slovenian tourists back in November 2018 was the same anyway. Two notable permanent items were busts of Tito made by Anton Augustinčić, a bronze one and a white marble one, with Tito's head emerging from an unhewn stone slab. One of these had until 2015 been located in the office of the President of Croatia. When Kolinda Grabar-Kitarović assumed office, she had it and more than 100 other socialist-era artifacts, including gifts Tito received from world leaders, packed up and shipped to the museum in Kumrovec. A covered stage was set up at an angle across from Tito's birth house, as well as some seats under flimsy gazebos. The official program commenced at 11 with the singing of Croatia's anthem. The rest was mostly speeches.
Dragi prijatelji! Drugarice i drugovi, dragi gosti i domaćini.
The representative of the organizers opened the program with some words of welcome and praise for, quote, comrade and friend Tito, the most important and wisest leader of the 20th century. He also informed visitors that uniformed policemen would be filming the proceedings. The cops standing at a gangway up at the house behind Tito's statue were promptly booed.
But what I could see is also some kind of relaxation at the local level when it comes to the recognizing the event. Museum was participating more in the event. Not that they organized the program, but they were there. They saw it more as an opportunity for themselves to promote their activities, to be present and visible.
Poštovani gosti, dobro nam došli u najpoznatije selo na svijetu. Dobro nam došli u rodno mjesto najpoznatije Kumrovčanina, Zagorca, svjetske ličnosti Josipa Broza Tita.
The mayor of Kumrovec, Robert Špleit, welcomed visitors to the world's best-known village and the birthplace of the best-known Kumrovec resident, of whom the village is proud and who is more respected outside of Croatia. The county head spoke, the president of the Association of Anti-Fascist Fighters and Anti-Fascists of Croatia, as well as his counterparts from other former republics, though not Serbia. And finally, the former president Stjepan Stipe Mesić. Like all speakers before him, the first post Tudjman president, for two terms no less, offered a critique of the current state of affairs in Croatia and a comparison with the past.
Je li to što govorim jugo nostalgija? Ne. To je naprosto realan pogled na stvari. Tito je bio i ostao simbolom postojanosti, principijelnosti, odlučnosti, hrabrosti i vizije.
Is what I'm talking about jugo nostalgia? No. It's simply a real view of things. Tito was and remains a symbol of pride, principles, decisiveness, bravery and vision, everything that Croatia is lacking. This is why we need gatherings like these, not because we are prisoners of the past, but because we wish the best for our country, for our region, we wish the best for Europe and the world, but above all, we wish the best for our children and grandchildren. If these messages seem subversive relative to today's discourse in Croatia, that's because they are. Škrbić Alimpijević and her collaborator in the Kumrovec study, Kristi Matthiesen Heimdall, wrote that, in many ways, the Kumrovec celebration may be viewed through the term deviance. It is performed by people generally regarded as marginal at an infamous place that has disappeared from the nation's mental maps on the date of the former national holiday of a dissolved country, including a ceremony commemorating the birthday of a person whose historical role is highly controversial. The celebration itself is an uncalled-for reaction to official silence, an expression of alternative truths not voiced in the mainstream public sphere, which can only happen in forgotten places and forbidden forms. End quote. A big part of the event, as of every such event, is music. The opera singer Barbara Othman gave a rendition of Padaj silo i nepravdo that you've been hearing throughout the show. The program concluded with a concert of the Trieste-based choir Pinko Tomažić that performed Partizan and other revolutionary songs. The very final micro-event was a gathering of old cars, with a procession arriving from Zagreb. As I headed back to my new rental Opel Corsa, I thought of the words of farewell from the stage, see you next year, and what future may bring for the Day of Youth.
I think that the myth of Tito will be active and effective in years to come, although it will find some other ways, I would say, to be enacted. And I think that actually the museum would take more part in it than it does now. I think that the organizers of this event are elderly people, and I'm not sure from what I know about this scene that younger people would take on the organization in this way. But I still think that groups of people will gather there, although in a more unorganized, inofficial setting, you know, and some new messages, perhaps even more future-oriented, will be organized, will be conveyed from there. But it depends a lot on how Kumrovec decides to take the stance, the attitude towards this Tito legacy. There was one plan to open the museum of the 20th century there, you know, and to show different layers of memory, you know, not just either positive or negative ones, Tito as a hero or Tito as an villain, anti-hero. If that happens, that could really, in a way, take a turn towards the politics of remembering carried out by cultural institutions, you know. But at the time being, I think that the Day of Youth is actually one of the platforms where this memory lives on in this setting.
By a stroke of chance, I got to attend the 2023 Day of Youth celebration, which took place just 2 days before this episode's release date and long after the production deadline. The extended version of this episode includes a report from that event, supplementing the story you just heard. That episode, out shortly, is available exclusively to Patreon supporters and select other donors. If you have not yet backed the show, visit rememberingyugoslavia.com or follow the link in your podcast listening app to get access. On the way back to Zagreb, I stopped at Villa Zelenjak Ventek for coffee. I asked the waiter to stretch out his palm and placed on it a cheesy matchbox I had picked up from a souvenir stand, placing Tito's face down. He turned the matchbox over, gave a throaty laugh, thanked me, and as he tucked it into his pocket said, "You know what we call this? Zagorje Zippo." Walking out the door, I waved goodbye to him. He came over, shook my hand, and said, "Goodbye, friend." Coming up on Remembering Yugoslavia.
He was obviously a humanist, slightly more advanced, let's say, than other writers of that period.
Vladimir Nazor is Croatia's best-known poet and children's writer. He was also Tito's partisan and adulator and Croatia's first president. Hundreds of streets and schools in Croatia bear his name. Next on the show, the story of Vladimir Nazor. Tune in wherever you listen to podcasts, follow to make sure you don't miss out, and subscribe to support us. That's all for this episode of Remembering Yugoslavia. Thank you for listening. Find additional information, embeds, links, photos, and a transcript of this episode at rememberingyugoslavia.com/podcast. And don't forget to back the show to get access to the extended version of this episode, featuring coverage from the 2023 edition of The Day of Youth and Joy. The track Rainmaker by Petar Alargic, licensed under Creative Commons. I am Petar Korhnjak. Smrt fašizmu!
Živio Tito!
Živio!